Today is Monday, November 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. The U.S. lifts its COVID-related restrictions. One woman in Britain says she can't wait to see her grandson in New York.
I want to wear a badge. I'm going to see my grandson. I'm going to, I want a big hat or something. I'm going to see my grandson.
Iraq's government vows to find those responsible for an attack on the prime minister's life.
We will continue to search for the perpetrators of this heinous crime, which they committed yesterday, by targeting the residence of the prime minister.
And Nicaraguans went to the polls on Sunday in an election that some critics are calling a sham. We'll have these stories and more next. Travel restrictions to the U.S. issued during the pandemic have been lifted after more than a year and a half. On Monday, travelers from a long list of countries, including Canada, Mexico, and most of Europe, who were vaccinated, can resume flights to the U.S. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has this report.
Bhavna Patel has been a grandmother for more than a year. She lives in London, but because of travel restrictions due to the pandemic, she's never met her grandson, who lives in New York. Starting Monday, travel restrictions from Britain and several other countries end for vaccinated passengers. Patel can hardly wait.
I want to wear a badge. I'm going to see my grandson. I'm going to, I want a big hat or something. I'm going to see my grandson.
Patel is just one of millions of people who were unable to travel to the U.S. for more than a year and a half. The pandemic restrictions have taken a toll on the U.S. economy in more sectors than just travel and leisure.
As people have traveled less and traveled more, it's played a big role in influencing energy prices and other prices of raw materials. And that then, of course, filters into almost every aspect of the economy.
Professor Todd Noop says a strong tourism industry inside the U.S. has kept sectors from struggling as much as in other countries that rely heavily on foreign tourism.
Putting restrictions on the travel of human has also put restrictions on the travel in the movement of goods and services. And so in a increasingly globalized economy, at least an economy that was increasingly globalized up to 18 months ago, that has just led to a lot of, I would say, unanticipated bottlenecks.
Bottlenecks like the backup of cargo ships at the key ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. Ships wait for days to offload their cargo at the congested ports on the West Coast where most products from China enter the U.S. Noop says supply chain issues will likely have a bigger impact on the economy than travel as the country heads into the holiday shopping season.
A year ago, it was the travel industry that was suffering, but we had positive effects on the supply side from lower energy. Now we're kind of in the exact opposite situation where higher energy prices and supply chain issues are slowing the economy down. But on the demand side, things are strong.
Still, for travelers like Bhavna Patel, the only news that matters is her upcoming flight.
Like if I could dance, I would dance.
On Monday, the U.S. will also open its land borders with Mexico and Canada to vaccinated travelers. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Workplace mandates requiring vaccination against COVID-19 continue to be controversial in the U.S. The Biden administration is expected to respond this week to a federal recent court decision to temporarily halt federal vaccine mandate rules for large employers. Michelle Quinn reports.
Around the U.S., the fight over workplace rules requiring vaccination against COVID-19 is heating up. The White House is set to respond this week to a court order temporarily halting a federal vaccine mandate for businesses with more than 100 employees. Some states, businesses, and religious groups sued, arguing the mandate is unconstitutional. The Biden administration argues it is necessary.
There are times where we recognize that our decisions have a broader effect on people around us. COVID has reminded us of that. And that's why having these types of requirements in workplaces will be not only helpful, but it's a necessary step to accelerate our pathway out of the pandemic.
The Biden administration says it's the responsibility of the federal government to create and enforce workplace safety rules. But some lawmakers say the COVID-19 mandate goes too far.
I don't think people want this decision yanked away from them. I don't think they want to allow a precedent where the federal government could come in and just force you to do what it wants you to do.
With more people signing up to get a shot every day, some question whether the federal rules, which will go into effect in January, are worth the struggle.
At a point,
we need to ask ourselves, what is our goal? We vaccinated about 81% of adults over the age of 18. Where do we need to get to, and what price are we willing to pay in terms of cultural divide, acrimony, challenges?
While the number of new COVID-19 cases continues to decline in the U.S., an additional 70,000 cases are being recorded every day. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa el-Qadhimi has vowed to find those responsible for an attack on his life. On Sunday, Qadhimi escaped unharmed from an armed drone assassination attempt in Baghdad. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson reports.
Iraq's leader Mustafa al-Qadhimi vowed on Sunday to expose those behind an attack on his life. The prime minister escaped unharmed after armed drones targeted his residence in Baghdad's Green Zone. Security sources told Reuters six of his guards were wounded in the attack. No one has yet claimed responsibility. Shortly after the incident, Qadhimi's office published a video of him chairing a meeting with top security commanders.
We will continue to search for the perpetrators of this heinous crime, which they committed yesterday by targeting the residence of the prime minister. We will search for the perpetrators, and we know them very well. We know them well. We know them well. We will find them surely.
The attack has dramatically raised tension in Iraq, weeks after a general election that's drawn the scorn of militia groups backed by Iran. They lost much of their power in the election, dispute the results, and have led protests and complaints about it. On Friday, there were violent clashes between government forces and supporters of the Iran-backed political parties. The United States, United Nations, Saudi Arabia, and Iran have all condemned the attack on Iraq's leader.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. Nicaraguans voted on Sunday in a presidential election marked by longtime President Daniel Ortega's ruthless campaign to extend his tight grip on power by jailing critics in a contest the United States has dismissed as a sham. Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan reports.
Nicaraguans went to the polls on Sunday in a vote that the U.S. called a sham, whose outcome has long been determined. President Daniel Ortega was set to win re-election after the 75-year-old had jailed top rivals, including seven presidential hopefuls, business leaders, journalists, and even some of his old rebel allies. U.S. President Joe Biden blasted the Nicaraguan leader and described it as a pantomime election that was neither free nor fair. Ortega is a one-time revolutionary who helped depose the right-wing Somoza family dictatorship in the 1970s. He's already the America's longest-serving leader, with 15 consecutive years in power, and has ruled alongside his wife since early 2017. Last week, U.S. officials said new sanctions were being considered against the couple's government. Neighbor Costa Rica rejected the vote as undemocratic, and people took to the streets to protest the elections. Prolonged social and political unrest in Nicaragua has sent exiles to Costa Rica and added to the already growing ranks of Central American migrants. Tens of thousands of Nicaraguans have fled the country since 2018, when Ortega's government cracked down violently on peaceful protests, leaving hundreds dead. Nicaraguans reaching the U.S. border this year have already hit a high of about 50,000, according to official data.
That was Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan reporting. You're listening to VOA News.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa. We'll take a look at coup d'etats on the continent. Are military power grabs making a comeback from Sudan and Chad, Guinea and Mali? We'll look at the causes and consequences of the latest series of takeovers and attempted coups in African countries. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. Investigations are underway to examine the design of safety barriers and the use of crowd control in determining what led to a crush of concertgoers at a music festival in the U.S. state of Texas. 8 people were killed and hundreds more were injured on Friday night. Maximiliano Alvarado was looking forward to this year's Astroworld Music Festival in Houston. The 20-year-old had attended the festival's first 2 years, which he described as amazing, but he said this year's concert felt different. Reuters reporter Gavino Garay has this story.
It's a very depressing scene over here. You can feel everyone's pain.
20-year-old Maximiliano Alvarado was one of the concertgoers at rap star Travis Scott's Astroworld Music Festival that left 8 killed and wounded dozens, and says he saw bodies.
He's not having a pulse.
Alvarado took this video posted on social media of fans being led to safety on Friday night.
You can feel everyone's frustration, confusion. You know, it is supposed to be a good time, and this is not something you would expect to be doing after going to a festival, going to a memorial for the people that died in this festival.
Alvarado contributed to a makeshift memorial at the concert venue in Houston on Sunday, where some laid flowers, wrote messages, and lit candles in remembrance of those who perished during the stampede. At the concert venue, workers were beginning to take down the surrounding fence, and drone footage captured a deserted stage on Sunday. But the scene was far more chaotic on Friday night. Concertgoers cried for help as the show appeared to go on, with Scott seemingly unaware of the horror unfolding on the ground.
I just want to send out prayers to the ones that was lost.
In a statement over the weekend, Scott said that while on stage, he could not imagine the severity of the situation, adding that he is absolutely devastated by the incident. At least 2 investigations, one of them criminal, were underway on Sunday into the deadly stampede. Officials in Houston said autopsies were being performed as soon as possible so their bodies could be returned to family members, with the identities of some of the dead expected to be released soon. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner said the dead were young, some of them just 14 and 16, and others in their 20s.
That was Reuters reporter Gavino Garay. Satellite images revealed on Sunday that China's military has built mock-ups in the shape of a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier and other U.S. warships, possibly as training targets, in the desert of Xinjiang. These mock-ups reflect China's campaign to build up anti-carrier capabilities, specifically against the U.S. Navy, as tensions remain high with Washington over Taiwan and the South China Sea. The satellite images show a full-scale outline of a U.S. carrier, and at least 2 guided missile destroyers had been built at what appears to be a new target range complex in China's Taklamakan Desert. In India, at least 89 people, including 17 children, have tested positive for the Zika virus in a surge of cases in the city of Kanpur. That's according to the city's health department. The mosquito-borne virus was first discovered in 1947. The Zika virus has reached epidemic proportions in Brazil in 2015, when thousands of babies were born with microcephaly, a disorder that causes babies to be born with abnormally small heads and underdeveloped brains. Germany's coronavirus infection rate has jumped to its highest recorded level ever. Officials have called it the pandemic of the unvaccinated. The National Defense Control Center said Monday that the country has seen just over 200 new cases per 100,000 residents over the last 7 days. That's higher than the previous record of 197.6 from December 22nd last year. While the rate is still lower than several other European countries, it has got German officials worried. The 7-day infection rate has long ceased to be the only measuring stick for monitoring COVID-19 cases. Security researchers say spyware from the notorious Israeli hacker-for-hire company NSO Group was detected on the cell phones of 6 Palestinian human rights activists. Half are affiliated with groups that Israel's defense minister claimed were involved in terrorist attacks last month. Monday's revelation marks the first known instance of Palestinian activists being targeted by the military-grade Pegasus spyware. Its use against journalists, rights activists, and political dissidents from around the world has been documented since 2015. A successful infection by Pegasus surreptitiously gives intruders access to everything on a person's phone. It is not immediately known who placed the NSO spyware on the activists' phones. People fleeing Ethiopia say a new round of deadly attacks and forced conscription has begun against Tigrayans who remain in an area now controlled by Amhara regional authorities in collaboration with soldiers from neighboring Ethiopia. The war is intensifying as rival Tigray forces approach Ethiopia's capital with the hope of pressuring the prime minister to step down. In his weekly address on Sunday at St. Peter's Square, Pope Francis decried the violence in Ethiopia and said he hopes dialogue will prevail. AP correspondent Karen Chamis reports.
Pope Francis has decried the recent situation in Ethiopia and has pressed for dialogue over war. The pontiff told his weekly audience at St. Peter's Square that he was worried about the country, which has been shaken by a conflict for over a year. The war in Ethiopia's North Tigray region has killed thousands of people. Millions more have been displaced, leaving many struggling with severe hunger. The UN Security Council has called an end to the fighting. It has also requested access to areas of the country for humanitarian aid to tackle the hunger crisis. I'm Karen Chamas.
Last week, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said he is extremely concerned by the escalation of violence in Ethiopia and the recent declaration of a state of emergency, with his spokesperson saying on Tuesday, the stability of Ethiopia and the wider region is at stake. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scattered in patches along a 75-kilometer-long strip of land between the Andes Mountains and the coastal range in Chile, scientists have found slabs of silicate glass. A research team led by scientists at Brown University in Rhode Island says they know what created them. In a study published in the journal Geology, researchers say they did find the glass does contain bits of material scientists have found in rocks of extraterrestrial origin. This fragment material closely matches the makeup of comet particles sent back to Earth in 2006 by NASA's Stardust mission. The researchers theorize that about 12,000 years ago, a comet exploded above the ground and fused the sandy soil of the Atacama Desert into the slabs of silicate glass. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Medically assisted dying is now legal in New Zealand. The End of Life Choice Act has come into effect 1 year after almost two-thirds of New Zealanders voted in favor of it. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Supporters believe the assisted dying laws will give New Zealanders who are suffering terribly at the end of their lives choice, compassion and dignity. To be eligible, a person must have a terminal illness that's likely to end their life within 6 months. They must also be able to make an informed decision. The legislation came into force Sunday, a year after a binding referendum. Brooke Van Velden is the deputy leader of the small ACT New Zealand party, which promoted the voluntary euthanasia law. She told Radio New Zealand the measures will benefit the South Pacific country of 5 million people.
This weekend, New Zealand became a kinder, more compassionate and humane society for allowing people who are struggling and suffering in those last few days with their terminal illness, choice and compassion on how and when they go.
However, some critics insist that patients with chronic conditions might feel obliged to use euthanasia to avoid being a burden on their families. They also believe that inadequate palliative care services need to be better resourced so that terminally ill patients receive better care. Some senior church leaders have said that while they oppose the deliberate taking of human life, they would still offer care and advice to those who chose assisted dying under the new laws. The government has appointed three experts, including a medical ethicist, to monitor the legislation. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said she voted yes in the referendum last year on voluntary euthanasia and the legalisation of recreational cannabis. New Zealand joins a small group of countries, including the Netherlands and Canada, which allow euthanasia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Malawi's parliament Monday welcomed the country's first ever elected albino lawmaker when it reconvened after months of recess. The presence of Overstone Kandawi in Malawi's National Assembly is seen as a victory for albinos who have faced attacks in this southern African country since 2014. Lamek Masina reports.
Let me assure you that I'll do to the maximum of my potential.
Until last Thursday, when he took the oath of office in the capital, Lilongwe, Kondowe was President Lazarus Chakwera's special advisor on persons with albinism and disabilities. The move, following a by-election 2 weeks ago, comes amid continued attacks on people with albinism in Malawi. Police records show that in the last 4 months, there were 7 attacks on albinos, including killings, attempted abductions, and physical violence. Separately, grave robbers have exhumed corpses to retrieve albinos' bodies. Kondowe is also the former president of the Association of Persons with Albinism in Malawi, or APAM. He says that as a lawmaker in the National Assembly, he will pursue his fight against the incidents targeting albinos.
Let me assure you that I'll do to the maximum of my potential to make sure that if we also have programs like what South Africa put in place, I'm ready to do that. And I've always demonstrated my ability to do so when I was acting outside the system. Now I'm in the center of the system. I'm sure change is coming, not tomorrow, but today.
The statistics show that since 2014, more than 170 albinos have been attacked in Malawi because of false beliefs that concoctions made with their body parts bring luck and wealth. To help stop the attacks, Malawian courts have imposed stiffer punishments on perpetrators. For example, 2 weeks ago, the High Court in the Northern Malawi sentenced 2 men to life in prison with hard labor for killing a 54-year-old albino. Young Muhamba is the current president of the APAM. He says the election of Kondowe to parliament sends a clear message that albinos are equal to other Malawians.
We will develop some things to do with the protection of people's albinism. So he will be the first voice there in parliament. He will be the first person to table the bill and to support it, and to also make others support it. So he will be like our voice.
Muhamba says the association is currently pushing the government to start implementing its program of constructing houses for people with albinism as a security measure. Simon Munde is acting executive director for the Federation of Disability Organization in Malawi. Munde believes that Kondowe, a member of the ruling Malawi Congress Party, will also represent people with disabilities.
We have in him, the fact that he's quite an advocate. He's done it even when he was the presidential advisor on disability. And we're not doubting in any way that that kind of a spirit will continue with it, as now he'll be able to speak within the legislative assembly.
Munde said the election of Kondowe to parliament should send a message to other public or private institutions that disability does not equate to inability. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of producer Nadia Taha and the entire team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa. We'll take a look at coup d'etats on the continent. Are military power grabs making a comeback from Sudan and Chad, Guinea and Mali? We'll look at the causes and consequences of the latest series of takeovers and attempted coups in African countries. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next